So we are reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, observing the army, and text number 37 to 38. Yadi api etena pashyanti, lobo fata cetasha, hulakshya kritam dosham, Mitra drohe chapatakam. Katham nagneyam asmabhi. Papadasman nivartitum. Kulakshya kritam dosham. Prapasyad bhirjanardana. Yadi. If. Api. Even. Ete, de, na, do not, pashyanti, see, loba, by greed, upata, overpowered, chetasha, their hearts, hulakshaya, in killing the family, kritam, done. Dosham, fault. Mitra drohe, in quarreling with friends. Cha, also. Patakam, sinful reactions. Katham, why. Na, should. Not, neyam, be known. Asmabhi, by us. Papat, from sins. Asmat, these. Nivartitum, to cease. Kulakshaya, in the destruction of a dynasty. Kritam, done. Dosham, crime. Prapasyat, bhi. By those who can see. Janardhan, O Krishna. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Janardhan, although these men, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or quarreling with friends, why should we, who can see the crime in destroying a family, engage in these acts of sin? Purport. A Kshatriya is not supposed to refuse to battle or gamble when he is so invited by some rival party. Under such an obligation, Arjun could not refuse to fight because he had been challenged by the party of Duryodhan. In this connection, Arjun considered that the other party might be blind to the effects of such a challenge. Arjun, however, could see the evil consequences and could not accept the challenge. Obligation is actually binding when the effect is good, but when the effect is otherwise, then no one can be bound. Considering all these pros and cons, Arjun decided not to fight. So here, in this verse, we can see that there are two sides. One is Duryodhan, and one is the side of Pandavas, Kauravas and Pandavas. So the other party of Duryodhan, they actually did not consider anything pious or impious in this whole battle, because they tried to do many bad things to the Pandavas. They tried to even kill them. So they did not consider even sinful activities, because loba upata chetasha, because they lost their senses on account of acquiring the empire, and because there was a lot of greed involved in this. And when one becomes lusty or overpowered by greediness, he loses his intelligence. So he loses the sense of discriminating what is right and wrong, and therefore he loses his intelligence altogether. And acts whimsically, irreligiously. So here Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Kamaistai Hritagyana Prapadyante Anya Devata Tam tam niyamam asthya prakritya niyata swaya. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. Also in one verse, Krishna is describing krodha bhavati samoha samohat smriti vibharmaha. Smriti brahmasad buddhi nasho buddhi nashat pranyashati. From anger, complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. So there are two verses here, so we can see that Duryodhan, because of being greedy, he lost his intelligence, and to the extent that he was, Yudhishthira Maharaj was actually the king, and Draupadi was the wife of Pandavas. And to the extent that they want to insult Draupadi in the whole sabha, in the assembly. And obviously, Krishna does not like that anyone to rule the kingdom if a person is deluded or, you know, out of senses, sense control. There is no sense control and acting greedy. So, Draupadi being the queen, it's a very big thing to insult the wife of the king. So it's a irreligious act. So that's why Krishna did not want, obviously, Duryodhan to rule, be the king. And because Pandavas were devotees of the Lord, completely surrendered devotees of the Lord, so that's why Krishna obviously wanted the Pandavas to you know, take back the kingdom, and the whole Mahabharata happened because of that. So, also Krishna mentions here that those who are the worshippers of demigods are actually worshipping him, because even whatever benediction, I mean, people go to demigods because they want some benediction from the demigod. So whatever benediction actually people get from the demigod is actually coming from Krishna. The demigods are not independent. They also depend on the Lord. So I was actually hearing a lecture from this verse, and Prabhupada also mentions this particular verse about this demigod. So that was something that I kind of tried to wanted to speak about a little bit. So other demigods must be respected, because they are actually serving the Lord in different departments, let's say. But ultimately, we should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the first one. Okay. Just like in India, I mean, there was one pandit just behind our house, and one time I remember my mother was going to the temple, and she was preaching him that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his answer was that no, Krishna is just an ordinary boy who is dancing with gopis. So many people even in India think that Krishna is just an ordinary person. Even when Lord Krishna was here on this planet, not everybody considered that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many examples of this, just like Shishupal, how he was insulting Lord Krishna continuously. And then when he reached the 100th time, the 100th insult, Lord Krishna cut his head by his Sudarshan Chakra. So he was also not considering Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Also, one example is that do you put this up? Also, one example is in Krishna book, Brahma and Indra, when Brahma stole the calves and the cowherd boys of Krishna because he was thinking it's just an ordinary, let's say, child. Or also Indradev, when he got angry, when they were doing the Indra Puja, but they ended up doing Govardhan Puja. So he was also thinking that Krishna is simply an ordinary boy or something like that. Then Krishna taught him a good lesson. So yeah. So Krishna also says this verse in Bhagavad Gita, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto, Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru, Mamivashyashi Yukt Vaivam, Atmanam Mat Prayanaha. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me, and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So it's amazing that how in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking about different kinds of yogas, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and different kinds of, you know, material nature, different modes and everything. But then in the end, he just speaks about to, you know, surrender unto him, sarvadharman paritajya mamekam sharanam raja aham tam sarva papebhyo moksha shami ma sucha. Just give up all the varieties of religion and surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all the sinful reactions. Do not fear. So in this lecture also, actually Prabhupada mentioned that all the living entities by constitution are eternal servants of the Supreme Lord, and that is actually healthy position. Just like we have this finger in this body, or like, let's say, hand. And as far as the hand is cooperating with my body or rendering service to the body, it's actually in a healthy condition. But if it does not, then it's in the diseased condition. So similarly, as far as we are actually rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we are in a healthy condition because that is our natural state. That is the Kula Dharma. That is actually the eternal Dharma of the living entity, to render service to the Lord. But if we are not actually rendering service to the Supreme Lord, we are actually in a diseased condition of life. So So similarly, those living entities who are not rendering service to the Supreme Lord, they are actually in ignorance, in diseased condition. When I go out, especially like this December, I remember I was meeting so many people, and you know, when you want to give them the book, you say like, "Oh, you look so happy, and you look like such a gentleman or a gentlewoman," and when you say that you look so happy, they're like, most of them like, "Yes, I'm so happy. I have the perfect family life. I have a dog. I have a house, and I have a perfect wife. And we are just going to have a burger and some things like that." People say, "And my life is so perfect. I'm so happy. I have a very good job." Things like that, you know. Or sometimes people say, "I just came back from the vacation. I'm so happy." So it's funny, like how people have no idea what happiness is actually. People think that happiness is in material things, but we are spiritual beings and we cannot actually find happiness in material things. It's not possible. So, yeah, so it's like they have no idea what they're talking about. So the real happiness can only come when we are actually engaged in Krishna's service, when all our senses are engaged in the Lord's service. So just like Krishna is saying this verse, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto, to engage our mind in thinking of him, you know, and to become his devotee, offer obeisances to him and worship him, and being completely absorbed in him, surely you will come to me. If we all engage all our senses in Krishna's service, then only we can actually find happiness. Otherwise, sometimes we can do this, like we can see our progress from when we started and till today, how much progress we had made, like when we started Krishna consciousness, the day and till today, whatever years we have spent or whatever time. So we can see that progress if we found some happiness, and I think many of us have found some happiness. So sometimes some people are, you know, people are actually trying to forget Krishna. Actually, I was in Maribor and when we had this marathon, and I approached one lady and I had tilak, you know, so she's like, "Oh, you are Hare Krishna," and I was like, "Yeah," and she's like, "I don't want these books." I was like, "Why not?" She's like, "I don't like Krishna, and I don't want to think about him. I don't like him, please." And I, of course, I did not approach her again. So here in this lecture, Prabhupada was saying that someone is trying to forget Krishna. So now I'm, you know, I can relate to that, that like she was saying that she just doesn't want Krishna at all. So people are actually trying to forget Krishna or become equal to him. But there was also this example of, was that a Pondrik who was trying to be Dwarkadish? Pondraka, yeah. He was a fake, he was trying to be Dwarkadish, no?
Narayan.
Narayan, yeah. So he was trying to be Narayan, and he was telling everyone that he's Narayan. So, but he was fake Narayan, and Krishna came and killed him. So this statement that everyone is trying to be equal to him also, you know, is fair. It says it all with this example of Pondrak. But we should pray to Lord to, we should not try to be equal to him or above him, because that's not possible. Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying that no one is equal to him, and no one can be above him. Nobody can be greater to him. He's the source of everything. So there is no way that people try to imitate Krishna, but we cannot be anywhere equal to him or above him. So I'd rather, our position is always to be an eternal servant of the Lord, and we all have an eternal relationship with the Lord, because this material world is not our home. The spiritual world is our home. We are just here passing through this world, actually. So rather than trying to be equal or above Krishna, which we cannot be, we should pray to Krishna to engage us in his loving service. That is only when we can actually find real happiness. So because of greed, because we can see, because of this greed, Duryodhan, they even set fire when the Pandavas were the kingdom was taken by Duryodhan from the Pandavas. So the Pandavas left and they went to one house, I think incognito. And then Duryodhan, you know, they tried to set fire in the house, trying to kill them. So that is because of the greed, you can see. So kula kayam dosham. So great fault destroying the dynasty. But I think it's not even about dynasty these days. I think people are destroying the womb, you know. They are doing so many horrible things like abortion and contraception. I was seeing one video, and it was said that in India, actually in India, it's not allowed to do abortion, but they still do it. And even it's not allowed to check the gender. It's a crime. In many of the hospitals or clinics, it's written outside that we cannot check the gender, otherwise you will be fined or it's a crime, like that. But I was watching this video, and there it says there was some, calculation or something like this, which say that 14,000 abortions just in one each day in India. So it's not even now destroying dynasty, because we don't have dynasties anymore, but people are actually destroying the womb. They're doing horrible things. So also another thing Prabhupada mentioned in this lecture was putra. Pu means punaram narakam. So there is a hell named punarak. Narak is actually hell. the translation. And tro means trayate, to deliver. So the putra is actually, putra means son. So the son is actually expected to deliver the forefathers from you know, this whole cycle of birth and death. Okay, that's good. So the son has actually a duty to save the forefathers also, and but also according to Vedic civilization, it is also said that one should not become parents unless one is able to deliver the child from the clutches of birth, death, and old age and disease. So, and the purpose of marriage is to actually bring Krishna conscious children, where the parents train the children to become devotees and ultimately go back to Godhead. But these days, people are not even entrusted to keep children. They are just killing them, even before they are born. So, also, Prabhupada mentioned about marriage, actually. There are different kinds of purification process. One of them is marriage. Marriage is done to beget children, but not just cats and dogs, but actually to beget Krishna-conscious children. Because having Krishna-conscious children, they not just help the, they help the society, and also they are good, let's say, citizens. They are not like cats and dogs with no purpose in life. But these days, people don't, they don't even want to get married, like so much sinful activities. Yeah, so that's why there is no purity. Even actually in India, like it's quite, it's terrible, because even in India these days they have this court, you know, passed this law of so-called live-in relationships. And I think I saw this video where they were, the government did not want to, but many people, the feminists or others, the people, they actually pushed with their own philosophy, and they wanted to sanction this law of living together before marriage. But now it's kind of legal now. So, I mean, there are so many different processes, you know, in the Shastras, so many rules and regulations, and but living in Kali Yuga, everything is not possible. So that's why the best is to surrender to the Lord, because Krishna also says, the sarva dharman parita jema mekam sharanam raja aham tam sarva papebhyo mokshashami ma sucha. So just to surrender unto him, and he will deliver us from sinful reactions, and you should not fear. Also, one verse where I mentioned about the demigods, where people who have, who are less intelligent, they surrender onto the demigods. But Prabhupada also mentions in the lecture that the demigods, actually, we are very indebted to the demigods also, not just demigods, but normal human beings, or even to cow, because we take milk from her, so we are also indebted to her. But instead of being grateful to mother cow, we have, people have so many slaughterhouses, and they are killing the cows. So we are indebted to demigods like sun god, moon god, Indradev for water, just like we pay taxes, just like we get electricity, we get water from the government, and we have to pay something to them, you know, repay them something. So similarly, we also have to repay something to the demigods, because we are getting everything from them, the light, the sun, moon, water, and heat, and everything, you know. So also we are indebted to the mother nature, because we get fruits and vegetables and everything, but they are exploiting. We are also indebted to Vyasadeva, because he has given us Vedic literature, so we should feel some, you know, indebted to them. But how we can repay them? So just like by surrendering to Krishna and rendering service to the Lord, we can actually repay the sadhus and acharyas and the demigods and everything. Because just like there is a plant, And in the plant, you have flowers, you have leaves. So just by watering the root of the plant, automatically everything is actually watered. So we don't have to, you know, water flower or leaves separately. So similarly, by worshipping Krishna, by rendering service to the Lord, everyone is satisfied. There was one, there's one example for this. Just like when Pandavas were in exile, and Draupadi did not have any more food left because she ate it, because she had this boon, you know, that once she will eat, there will be no more grain left. What's that one?
For Vasmuni, yeah, gave her a place that as long as she didn't eat, then there's a few more food. So she was able to feed all the Brahmins in the forest along the Pandavas. But then Duryodhana sent Durvasamuni just at the time when Draupadi had taken her meal. So supposedly there would be no more food.
Yeah. So he sent her, and then she was so embarrassed, like she doesn't have any more food. So then then Durvasamuni goes, he came with so many disciples, and then he goes for the kya kehte hain. Yeah. But yeah, in the river, but she was so embarrassed. She's like, how will I feed him now? And he came with so many disciples, also not just alone. And then Lord Krishna, and then she prays to Krishna, and then Krishna was there, and he eats one morsel of rice, some vegetable. He eats one morsel of vegetable, and the moment he eats, everyone is satisfied. All his disciples, Durvasamuni, everybody feels so full. So they don't want to go back to Draupadi because they feel they can't eat now anymore because they were so full, so they would feel embarrassed. So they just leave, they just don't go back to her actually. So this is one example that how simply when we satisfy Krishna, everyone is satisfied actually. So this is one example I wanted to give. So here, Arjun was considering so many things because he's a devotee of the Lord, and he's considering so many things, but he was considering these things on the bodily platform because, oh, this is my teacher, these are my cousins. But even if Arjun would not fight, the war was already, set by Krishna. They were going to die, the Kauravas. So, but by fighting in the war, Arjun became a great fighter. So, Nimitra Madhyam Bhavya Savya Sachi, just become my instrument, Krishna says. So Krishna said, even if you don't fight, I mean, they're anyway, by his arrangement, by the Lord's arrangement, Kauravas are going to die. So if Arjun fought, so he got the credit. Because Krishna likes to glorify his devotees, we can see. Even on book distribution, actually, sometimes we think, oh, I did so many books. But it's actually not us. It's Lord Krishna who is doing it. Srila Prabhupada, and, we are not doing, we are just... Let's say we are just an instrument in their hands. No. But Krishna likes to glorify his devotees, so... Yeah. Okay. There's also one more verse in Bhagavatam. So Arjun says, Katham nagneyam asmabhi papad asma nivartitam kulakshyakritam dosham prapasyadbhir janardana. O Janardana, although these men, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or quarreling with friends, why should we, who can see the crime in destroying a family, engage in these acts of sin? So Prabhupada says devotee must be responsible, that no one can blame him. But Arjun was also, let's say, worried because by killing the other party of Duryodhan, so who is coming on the battlefield? Ladies are not coming on the battlefield, men are coming. So brothers, their son, their husbands, their fathers, like that. So if they are killed, then the women of these men, they will become widows. Actually, in the next verses also, it is talked about degradation of womanhood. When irreligion is prominent.
Krishna, timetable on Sankara. The destruction of the family, the women of the family become corrupt, and from the degradation of women, there comes unwanted problems.
So Arjun was also considering these because they will become widows, and then once they become widows, or they lost their son or someone, because women should be protected, you know, in her youth when she's unmarried, she must be protected by the father. When she's married, she must be protected by husband, and when she's old, she must be protected by son or some elderly members. So so not having any man in the house, in their family, so women will become, they will be unprotected. And when Prabhupada says women are like, you know, women are like children, they are easy to be exploited. So when women are not protected properly, and women are given freedom, so they can be exploited very quickly. And we can see that also. Actually, we can see one example is when in Ramayana, Mother Sita, when she was enchanted by the deer. Actually, I was watching today only this one. When Mother Sita, she was enchanted by the deer, and she asked her husband, Lord Ram, to go and catch the deer. So he went, and then there was this, Raman was playing this trick, you know, with them. And then she heard...
Marichi.
Raman was also there.
Marichi was the deer.
Yeah. So, then they heard Lord Ram's voice, but it was actually not Lord Ram who was calling for help. I mean, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He doesn't need anyone's help. As such, he can kill, you know. So, then he was calling for help, and she was so scared. She thought that her Lord is calling. So she sends Lakshman to go and check on Lord Ram, what happened, you know. And Lakshman's like, my dear mother, please don't worry. He's the Lord of the three worlds. Nothing is going to happen to him, you know. But she's like, no, how can you say like this, you know. He's my husband is calling me, you know. Calling for the help. Anyway, so he goes, but he marks Lakshman Rekha so that she doesn't, that nobody can enter in that, what is it, cottage? Heritage? No. Cottage. So nobody can enter the cottage. But, I mean, the point is that as soon as he goes, Ravana comes and he takes advantage of her. Although she's goddess of fortune, you know, she can protect herself. But this is another one, the Maya form, because the original Sita, she returned back to Godhead. Anyway, so the point is that he comes and he kidnaps her and he takes her away. So the point here is that... So she was unprotected, and she got exploited, in a sense, you know. She's mother of fortune, god of fortune, nobody can do it, you know. This is an example the Lord was trying to show, you know, how that women should be protected. So, so that's why women protection is very much emphasized. Okay, I think there is more I can think. So these are some traditions, you know, people have to keep. This is the Sanatan Dharma, you know, which is the Kula Dharma Sanatan. So, and our duty is to revive actually this Dharma. And by following the rules and regulations of the Varnashram Dharma. So that is called Kula Dharma, which is for different ashrams, you know, and Varnas, like Brahmana, Kshatriyas, Vaishya, Shudra, or different ashrams, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasi. And actually one must follow strictly the rules and regulations of each of their ashram, and by doing that one can actually please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But one should not accept just Brahman or Kshatriya just because they are born in that family, but actually the symptoms should be there to determine what they are actually. I was also hearing one lecture of Prabhupada where he mentioned that in India they have, you know, just because, two examples he gave. One of them was like, just because they are born in Brahmana family, they wear like some thread, you know, of 10 rupees or something. because they're not really, they're really not Brahmanas. One has to have those qualities. Another one is, there's one example he was mentioning was of like so-called spiritual masters who are not bona fide. They initiate some disciples and make them Brahmana or something, but then they do not accept the food cooked by those disciples. So they're not actually purified yet. This is not proper process to purify. The proper process is our Krishna consciousness movement, which is giving all of us an opportunity to actually become first-class citizen and purify our existence. Also, I will speak a little bit on this Ayodhya temple. Today was the big temple in Ayodhya, the Ram Mandir, inauguration of that, and the Lord appears. Lord Ram appeared in Treta Yuga, and his vow was actually to accept. Lord appears. Yada yada idharmasya glanir bhaviti bharata. So he appears for three reasons. One reason is to re-establish the religious principles. Second is to annihilate the demons, and the third to kill the demons. Or the third is to protect the devotees. So the Lord Ram appeared, and he took a vow of just accepting one wife. I mean, although he could create so many Sitas, you know, by his internal potency, but he took a vow to just accept one wife, so he fulfilled that vow, and he to kill the demon, and he killed Ravana. Yeah. Okay, I think I will stop here. If anybody has any question or comment. Okay, thank you very much. Bhagavad Gita ki jai.